Downloading 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey! Hello, gentlemen. How are you all?
Fantastic, beautiful, moist, lovely. Thank you.
Wow.
Wow. I'm doing well. I don't know if I'm doing as well as that.
No, I tell you, that's not how I'm doing at all, quite frankly, and I'm quite happy to say that. Yes, hello. Look, gentlemen, thank you so much for taking care of the show for the past couple of weeks.
It was all Tim. He did a good job. Well done, Tim.
I can't take all the credit, but it was a lot of fun. Thank you, Stephen.
Well, yes, I am back, so the nonsense starts here. Yes, we are back on the show. Yeah, it's good to be here, actually. We've got so much to talk about, because in the world of technology... it's exploding. I mean, I was listening to the show past couple of weeks. Who am I kidding? You know, I heard...
You've never listened to one episode,
I heard about the show. I believe it was good. No one complained, so that's a start.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank goodness.
The mailbox did not complain... what am I trying to say? I'm just back and I can't speak. Did not contain any hate, which, I have to say, there's always hate when I'm on.
So thank you, listeners. We love you.
We love you. Thank you. Sean, that means we did something right, I think. Or just enough right that we didn't get hate.
Just enough right. Okay, so I wanted to tell you quickly two things. Listen, scrap the music. I know people love the music, but you know what? Scrap the Thunderbirds theme.
Oh.
Stop it there because, you know, I just want to talk. I've got stuff to tell you. There's so much to unload on you with this. I mean, there's so much stuff. So
you're saying you want to talk about yourself for the next hour? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that would be right. Because, you know, I've been kind of holed up for the past couple of weeks, so it's probably nice to vent out.
So much to say, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I am back, and therefore I've got lots to say. Who'd have thought? But, yeah, first things first, I bought the world's worst laptop the other week, and I just want to share... I bought this laptop because it had an i7 processor. It's now got a 512 gig solid state drive in it. It's got an additional 2 terabytes in it, inside the laptop, not like an external drive.
Wow.
And 16 gig of RAM. And it's terrible.
Why is it terrible, Stephen? I already know the answer to this, but, you know, why is it terrible?
Yes, do tell.
Well, as I'm sitting here using it, the power lead keeps going, so I try and use it, and it kind of doesn't work.
Now, can I tell the listeners what happened? Why it was so amazingly funny?
Well, yes, it was rather amusing.
Funny and scary at the same time. Go ahead, Sean.
Thank you, Tim.
Well, I find it funny. So we were recording the intro, and Stephen's in full flow, and, you know, being a professional as ever. And all of a sudden, there was just a loud popping noise, and then it sounded like a body hitting the floor, and then nothing, silence. So, of course, Tim was incredibly worried. Oh, no, what's happened, and shouting, Stephen. And, of course, I was on the floor in fits of laughter. And we were worried that there was some, well, Tim was worried there was some sort of medical emergency, and it turned out the laptop power pack had just given up the ghost. But, oh, it was hilarious. It's a shame we don't have the recording.
It is a shame, because the recording just kind of fizzled out with everything else, but I was concerned until I realized he was fine, and then I found the hilarity in it. But yeah, that was a scary moment for a
only for a moment. Yes, thank you, guys. Well, let's hope this show makes it to air, because it's all riding on this power cable, which is not working very well. And it seems funny, because only when I start recording on it does the power lead go. It works perfectly fine the rest of the time. It's your
it's
fault.
An omen.
Just don't move.
I'm trying that, but it doesn't work. Right, anyway, so that's the first thing. That's my first gripe of the day. But there is good news in amongst this. So I got... Well, I've decided to get myself a new television for my office space upstairs, you know. And you know what I'm like, guys. I'm not one of these people that likes to, you know, just buy your general...
Spend money.
I don't like to spend money. Not lots of money, anyway. So I right. took a decision... to go out and get something. Now, I should say that, you know, I started out with the intention of just getting a small TV for upstairs. And it's not for upstairs. It's not for anything, you know, just maybe when I'm when my wife's out of a night or whatever. And, you know, maybe I just decide I want to sit down and watch a box set. You know, I'll sit down and watch this TV.
Yeah, something adequate for an office space. Yeah, I understand, Stephen. A little black and white portable, just something like that.
Yeah, so maybe sure. Like a 40-inch maybe. So anyway, I take what? A wander into the... Yeah, well, that's quite... You know, what, is that too big?
Yes, I was thinking more like a 24, 22-inch. What's this, 40-inch? Wow.
Have we met? No, I mean, I think a 40-inch is the bare minimum these days.
Oh, how the other half live. Okay, so we see where you set the bar there. 40-inch, you're considering, is small. Now I'm worried.
So I head into the store and... I go straight to the 65-inch TVs, right? I'm standing there and I'm looking at them and I'm like, these are incredible. These are huge. Everything on them looks amazing. I'm thinking, this is just perfect. My wife is there and she's saying, hang on.
Never, on. Rookie mistake. Never take your wife you with you when you want to buy a TV. Wife.
Oh my gosh.
Or anything, it would appear. well, yes, I did think it was a bit of a bad move. However, I... was standing looking at it, and you know, the 65-inch, it was beautiful. I mean, it was gorgeous. Just a really nice, big telly, and I thought, this is going to be great. And the price wasn't too bad either. So I thought, okay. But you know what we do these days? You go into a store and you look at them, and then what you do? What's the next thing you do? What's the next logical step?
For me, it would be look online.
Exactly. And that's what I did. So I went online, found it cheaper. So, I thanked the man for his time and effort and for working so hard, but then I left and bought it somewhere else. Yes, and
you should
I did.
Be ashamed of yourself.
I know I should be, but I just couldn't because the price was too decent. So
I know.
Yeah, so I ended up buying it, 65-inch of pure glory. Now it's a Sony Bravia that I've bought.
Oh no! Oh, I've heard about them.
Yeah, terrible company at Sony. What are they like?
Horrible so, reputation, yeah.
Yeah, they only seem to make things that last for, what, minutes? So, yeah, anyway, I got this and I did a lot of research on this. To the point where I actually surprised myself at how much research, because I don't even do this much research for the show. and you might have guessed. And I thought, okay, so is this going to be any good? Is it not? And it's turned out this is, basically I'd say it's mid-level. I mean, I'm not going to get into what type it is because they're all, to be honest, they're also much of a muchness these days. But you know, it's doing the job and it'll be fine. So that was all fine. Got that. But the interesting thing was, while I was in the store, I looked at a Samsung, and there was a Samsung there. It was a 55-inch, but there's also a 65-inch option. And you can get it in different sizes as well. And it was the NU7000 range, which I think is last year's. NU8000 is the 2018 range, but this was, you know, it's still a good telly. I mean, it's a year old, who cares? And the price was okay, but one thing that the guy showed me was Samsung accessibility that was built into the TV. And this is kind of a long winding story I'm telling you to get to this point, because this TV has the accessibility in it. Now, Sean and I have had experience with this. We saw one.
Perfect. It was lovely. I wanted it.
Yeah, 55-inch, yeah. I think it was, we saw, and it was a nice telly. I mean, I don't think the size matters on it, because you can get the accessibility, I think, from the 40-inch upwards. But there may be a 32-inch as well. I mean, I think basically all the range now has this feature built in, so it's got accessibility.
I think anything that's labelled as smart
will now have the
accessibility.
Yeah.
But, you know, always check first. That's what I would always say. But yes. So he turns accessibility on. He says, do you want to try it? Now, what I was more impressed at is that he knew about it to turn it on. That was actually the first thing.
Yeah.
So I'm mucking around with it, and I thought, right, he said, okay, so you can actually use your voice to control it. So if you wanted to watch something, say on Netflix, you can just hold down a button on a remote control, which is shaped like a microphone, and you just say, like, play The Crown on Netflix, and it'll just start playing it. Can't turn on audio description with it, though, downside, but you can play the program. So if you've got your settings on Netflix, for example, already set to play audio description, then that should carry through. But my issue has always been, and we've talked about this in the show before, that when you get onto these TVs and you get into the smart system, the accessibility only lasts as far as the door to the app. So as you get to the apps, so say it's you've got apps on your TV, you might go to BBC iPlayer, or you might go to Now TV or whatever. You go into that. Beyond that point, as soon as you've clicked on that app, the accessibility's gone. Downside.
Yeah.
Right? Big downside. However, I just want to put out there, because I didn't realize until I had a play myself with this, that you can actually navigate around. Now, it's not perfect, right? I'm going to say that off the bat. This isn't perfect, but it is something. On the TV, all the menus are spoken. All the smart areas are spoken. Now, if you go to the... There's a button you press on it. I couldn't tell you what it looked like, but, you know, you press a button and it brings up a menu of all the apps along the bottom of the screen. So it brings up, like, BBC iPlayer, Now TV, Amazon Prime, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And you can sort of arrow along past all these different apps. They're all spoken, okay? But then, as I said before, the content isn't. However, if you just move up a little bit, if you press the up button, you'll actually get a menu of all the most recent stuff that's either available or stuff you've already watched on a row. And all of that is accessible.
Wow, I'm impressed.
So any app you're on, providing you don't go into the app, because that's not accessible, but just moving up a little bit, all of that is accessible. So basically anything within the Samsung menu system is accessible, including even recently watched. So if, for example, you were watching The Crown and you'd watched episode one last night and you went back into your TV, you could just use your remote and say, play The Crown on Netflix, and it'll do that. But if you struggled to do that, you can also just go through the menu system and it will read Netflix, and then you can move up and then read The Crown, you know, recently played. And when you hit play or hit the button to select, it'll open up and play the next episode. So that's something. It does feel a little bit like I've got a little bit further into the house. I always talk about the house and the doors that are locked and you can't get in, you know, you can get into the hall, but that's it. And it's kind of felt like that for a long time. This is similar, but I think it does give you some more options. So I was quite impressed, actually. You know, it wasn't too bad. There are other accessibility features on this TV, by the way. Certainly newer ones than I remember. I mean, voice guide is what they call the screen reader. Which provides verbal feedback about not just the channels that you're on, say, on Freeview, but also the volume, the program information as well. It'll read aloud all the text that's displayed inside the EPG. And it works for every menu on the television, as I was saying. You can also even adjust the pitch and tone of voice guide. So if it's too slow, you can speed it up. You can change the pitch as well. Obviously, audio descriptions on there, and it's on all the Freeview channels that support it, as the FreeSat channels, because Samsung TVs takes both satellite and aerials. There's high contrast mode as well, which is new, which configures the television to display all the menus in an opaque black background and white or yellow font, which gives you maximum contrast and visibility of the text. Great if you've got certain forms of eye conditions. And you can also enlarge those menus as well. Not zoom necessarily, but you can zoom in to the menu, so it makes it much larger. And of course, in those 4K televisions, that's really, really clear.
Huge.
So, yeah, and on a 65-inch, wow. So, yeah, there's loads and loads of stuff. Grayscale is another one. I think that's a great one because I've got problems with colours, but it will change the screen to, or the menu system to grayscale. And you can even invert the colours of the text as well, and background as well displayed on the TV to make it easier to read. There's even a different way of changing the colours to help people with colour blindness, which is incredible. So there's that. There's also other options for people who, say, have hearing problems. You've got multi-output audio, so you can have the television output to go to Bluetooth headphones when connected to the TV, which means you can choose to have audio directed to multiple devices with independent control. So say, for example, a member of your family's got hearing problems and needs to listen through their own headphones, multi-output audio allows you to do this without disabling the audio from the TV speakers. Obviously, there are subtitles as well and lots more, but not bad, I have to say. Not bad at all.
Hang on. That sounds amazing. As you said, we went through, I think it was one of the expos, we went through a Samsung TV. I was amazed. I was so impressed by the accessibility. You saw this, you loved all this, and then you went away and bought a Sony instead.
Yeah.
Why?
So, this is when things get interesting. Well, for me anyway, because
we're only 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
This is the, I know, it feels like a talking book, doesn't it? what did Stephen do this week? Well, so I got the Sony, but purely, I have to say, really simple answer to that. I don't need all those smart features. I don't use them, and I have concerns about the accessibility going forward. Because, you know, it's great that I can check out the most recently viewed programs and stuff, but if I want to explore further, I don't really have that option with accessibility. I do, however, with my Apple TV, and I also use Sky, which isn't accessible, but, you know, I get by with it. So, you know, because I've got Sky, that's where my TV watching comes from, which means I'm coming away from all those accessibility menus anyway. I'll never use them. And I've got Apple TV, which, of course, is beautiful and speaks and does all that stuff. So when you think about it, I don't really need any of that smart stuff. I don't need it because I'm not using it. I think a lot of people are probably in the same place with that. So for me, it's about quality of picture first. And I can always trust Sony to deliver a high-quality picture. That's what I opted for.
And I think most of the time, if someone is putting accessibility first, they probably already have an Apple TV or the new Fire TV Cube from Amazon, because it does basically the same thing that Apple TV does in a way. And so if they're looking for accessibility, they may already have those. If they don't, if they don't have any other type of solution for this, I think going with that Samsung TV with all of those accessibility features is a good start. Like you said, it gets you through that door of accessibility and gets you right up to where you'd want to be. Okay, so the apps don't have speech and accessibility. Well, fine, but at least you get that far where you could get that accessibility on a Fire TV Cube or an Apple TV. So I think that is a starter kind of thing. If somebody doesn't have anything at all and they need a new TV, then maybe they should look at something like that and get a Samsung. If they want that extra step, then I think you're right. I don't know that it matters about the TV as much as what you partner it with, whether, again, that's a Fire TV Cube or an Apple TV.
No, 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 no. I'm glad you're back, Stephen, because you're wrong, and I've been missing saying you're wrong.
Here it comes.
Right, okay, you're absolutely right in the aspect that how many people actually use the built-in tuner? You know, everyone's using either a cable box or a satellite box or an Apple TV. But you need to be, all TVs now, I think, they need to have the menu system itself accessible. Nobody cares about the smart side of smart TVs. The apps, as you said, are usually, you know, old, cranky, clunky, whatever. They're not great. They're very rarely updated. So no one cares about that. Everyone's got either a Amazon TV stick or Apple TV. But just being able to access the TV settings, being able to change the source, the HDMI source or whatever the other inputs it's got, being able to change the display settings, the actual TV menus itself, for me, just having that accessible is worth it. And I think all TVs should have those accessible. It doesn't matter about the FreeView tuner or the FreeSat tuner inside, it's a bonus. I mean, it would be great for me because I don't use any of the other cable or satellite services. But the actual TV menus need to be accessible, and it's worth it for that alone.
You know, Stephen, he makes a fair point.
Thank you.
Well, he does. But here's the interesting thing, right? So I think I actually agree with you. I think the apps, that's another thing. The apps on TV generally are pretty terrible. However, I think Samsung, in fairness, are probably the ones leading the charge here. I think they've kind of got this right. The only other one, the other TV I looked at was an LG. And I thought, the LG are usually quite good, because a friend's got one. And I thought, well, his TV's great. But I never knew, and I don't know if it's, and you know, forgive me if I'm wrong here, and I probably will be, I didn't spend a lot of time looking at it, but the one thing the guy showed me, he said, oh, it's great. He said, it's got this menu system. Everything appears, all the apps appear on the bottom when you bring up the smart menu. And you use this little joysticky thing, or not a joystick, but like a pointer, a bit like the Nintendo Wii, was how he put it. And you kind of just arrow over, and I'm thinking, well, that's that finished. I can't see that.
Mouse pointer, last thing I need.
Yeah, so I thought maybe not. I'm sure you could probably do it with buttons, because I know a lot of TVs now come with two remote controls. You get your normal standard, bog standard with loads of buttons on it, and you get usually these weird smart remotes that seem to have like three buttons that can control the International Space Station. And I don't really understand what the purposes of these things are, but I think it's just to kind of get you to smart features easier, I guess. But you know what? All is not lost here, because you're saying about TV accessibility. So I know Panasonic have got some accessibility in them. In fact, they were the first to bring it out, actually.
Yep.
A friend of mine's got an old Panasonic TV, and he can actually browse the web using the inbuilt screen reader. It's amazing.
No way. That's pretty impressive. Well, there's that. LG do now have some support as well. They do now have some accessibility in there, as do Samsung, obviously. But whilst the guy was showing me around the Sony, and we didn't spend a lot of time on it, because I didn't have a lot of time. At that point, my wife was bored. So I...
5 minutes
moving
in.
On quickly. You know, I spent enough time on one TV. I'd spent so much time on the Samsung. It's absolutely beautiful. Love it. Great. Where's your Sony's? And gone to see the Sony TV. And as he was going through the menus, do you know that way sometimes you can look at something when you're visually impaired, and even though you can't necessarily see what it says, you've got a pretty good idea of what it says? And I think the word accessibility for me is burned in my brain.
You wished it said accessibility.
And it did. So it does, apparently, this TV I'm getting does have accessibility built in. And looking at the Sony website for more details, it says that it has text enlargement and screen reader functions built in.
Ooh.
So let me read the, this is the blurb from the Sony website, and I'll have the TV for next show, but I don't have it yet. But when the TV arrives, I'll definitely be testing this out. Text magnification function increases the size of text on the screen, obviously. Screen reader allows one to check the TV program guides on screen or to change TV settings without looking at the screen. You can enjoy Bravia TV operations easily after activating the accessibility setting. Only available in some areas, it says, and in some languages. I hope it's on mine. We shall see. But there you go. So it does have accessibility on the TV, apparently.
Good. It should do. I think once you're going into that sort of realm, I'm not going to ask how much it is, but I'm assuming it's 65-inch. It wasn't cheap.
It wasn't cheap.
Oh, hang on.
No, well, what? No, well, it wasn't cheap. It was just under a grand. Just under a grand. So
just under a grand. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, when you think how much you would have paid for that. The last telly I bought took four men to bring it in, an old CRT 32-inch. It was ridiculous. And
this will also take three men to bring it in, by the way.
Yeah.
I said to them, could we put this in a Volkswagen Golf? That's my mother's car. And he said, no. He said,
not unless you put it on the roof.
You won't even get it in one of those Ford Rangers. He said, it's just not going in there. So, yeah, basically, I'm going to have to.
Delivery on top.
Delivery, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I expect some form of accessibility in there now. It's a good. I don't know. It seems like this expectation that I have, that, well, surely it's got a screen reader built into a TV now. I mean, just a couple of years ago, I would never have had that.
No.
So, you know, it is improving. I just wish it was a little bit better on the smart side of it, but you can't have everything. This is a good start.
I think it is a good start. It's nice to see that it's slowly becoming a standard, especially all those companies that you've named, Stephen. I mean, most of the time, those are the companies of you know, at least television manufacturers that you're going to look at first. And so for them to be leading this charge, I think is a positive sign. Is it where it needs to be yet? Maybe not, but I think it's fantastic as a start.
I think the Samsung actually does out. I mean, it probably is out front in terms of leading on the accessibility of what you can do. The problem is that there is a built-in barrier. And it's not Samsung's fault. It's the app developer's fault. And they need to sort that out. And that's the case with Fire TV as well. The entire system is accessible until you actually want to do something with it. I want to go into BBC iPlayer. I want to go into Prime. And I want to watch something. And then don't even be started on finding audio description. So, but I thought it was important this week to just because I had that experience, I wanted to share it, but I also wanted just to let you guys know of what's available out there, because I don't think a lot of us are aware of where we are actually in 2018 with it. And it seems quite quiet, doesn't it? Nobody seems to be shouting about it. I don't know why. Maybe they think, well, let's just put it out there and see if anyone notices. But of course, that's not the best thing to do for blind people.
It's quite good that... that the guy, the shop assistant, actually knew about accessibility from the start. I mean, that's progress on itself. And Samsung, I think, do make a big deal about their accessibility, and rightly so. I think they were the first to say, right, from now on, you know, every smart TV we bring out is going to have this voice guide, is going to have this accessibility. And I think they should make more of it. It's a big deal.
We've got to shout about it because... And I say we as in the community, not just the three of us, because nothing will happen if anything's left to us. But, you know, for the three of us together, and everyone's shouting about this, it's important because it costs money to develop this stuff. It costs money to put this into the technology. And if the companies think, oh, no one's interested in this, then that's it. You know, it might just disappear. I mean, I always had that worry around Apple. I thought if there comes a point where it just seems to be a problem, if we're too critical of it, then they'll just say, do you know what, forget it. I know they probably wouldn't do that, but that's a worry I've got. Because we're a small community, you know, whatever way you look at it, we're a small community. We don't have a huge voice. However, I think in 2018 now, where I used to say, I remember saying this in the show, and I only said it a few weeks ago, that you used to go into the big electrical stores and you would think about all the stuff that was in that store, how much of it was accessible to you. And up until maybe 10 years ago, probably nothing. But now we're starting to see all the computers that are in there, all the Windows PCs, the Chromebooks, the Apple Macs, they're all accessible. All the tablets are accessible, all the phones are accessible, now even the TVs are becoming accessible. So, white goods, we're coming after you, because that's the next thing we need to get sorted out. Anyway, that was my experience with televisions. Just wanted to share it, so hope that helps. I think it's time for this.
News from the internet.
So, news from the internet this week, tons of it. I can't believe this one. I mean, after the conversation we've just had, and Apple are being sued over an inaccessible website.
Not our beloved Apple. How could they? I feel betrayed.
This is insane. Let me give you the detail here, and then we'll discuss it. So, Apple facing a lawsuit claiming the company's website is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act, that's the ADA, by not being fully accessible to blind or visually impaired consumers. This was filed in a U.S. District Court of the Southern District of New York on Sunday from a plaintiff called Himelda Mendez, who is said to be being filed on behalf of other users. Apple is the sole defendant in the lawsuit. According to the filing, Mendez is described as a visually impaired and legally blind person who uses screen reading software to access the internet. The software is able to read out information on the screen, as we know. Mendez, who's said to be a proficient user of the Jobs Access with Speech software, which is JAWS, visited the Apple website earlier this month but encountered multiple access barriers that denied full and equal access to the facilities, goods and services offered to the public, such as being able to browse and purchase products, make service appointments, or learn of the facilities available in stores in New York, the city where Mendez resides. There's a whole load of other issues as well brought in there, but essentially we're talking about accessibility of Apple's own websites. Is this shocking?
It is to me, because now it's tricky because I don't really use Apple's online sites that much. The only time I use it is if I'm looking, you know, the new products that are coming out and to check on some specs, and I always find them really accessible. Navigate by headings, you know, read everything. Even the images are usually have alternate text on them, so I always find it really accessible. But for something like booking an appointment or iCloud even, I haven't gone through the online website. So, yeah, I don't know if it is accessible or not. I just assumed it would be.
I always assume the same thing because my use of the Apple website has been limited, just like you said, Sean, where I've looked at it for forums to get questions answered, or I've looked at release notes for new versions of iOS. And you know, maybe looked at new product specs when they do a big announcement and read through those. And those have always been very accessible. And like you, I always just assumed that everything else was. Now, when it comes to browsing for new products to purchase them, I use the Apple Store app on my phone, and I rarely do that. I'll just go to the Apple Store in person if I want to really look at something. But if I want to browse certain information, I might use the Apple Store app, and that's very accessible. I've made appointments through the app as well with my local Apple Store, and that was accessible. So I've done that on my phone via the app that I knew would be accessible, and it was easier to access for me. I never really gave it much thought about going to the website, but it is a bit shocking to know everything that I've accessed in the past that is so accessible, that there's this other side of their website that apparently is not.
Yeah, I find it just really strange, actually. I mean, it's not... my experience has been, I don't know if you've tried the Apple ID site, which always feels a bit hidden. That's the site where you go to if you want to... Like, for example, I didn't know this, but if you want to set up Outlook on a computer, so I've got my laptop that I'm, the worst laptop I've ever bought.
Killer laptop, yeah.
Yep, killer laptop. I bought this thing and I wanted to put Office on it, so I purchased my Office 365 license and did all the stuff I wanted to do, went to download it, very accessible process, thank you Microsoft, and got the software installed and all was good. Went to add my iCloud account to it so I could get that in, on Outlook, and it presented me with a problem because it said, well, your email, your password doesn't work. And I thought, So I tried a couple of times, was absolutely sure, tried signing in on other devices, everything was fine. So I thought, that's a bit odd. So Googled it, turned out that you have to go into the Apple ID website and create a specific, it's called an app-specific password for that device. It's supposed to be also for security, it obviously is, but wow, what a difficult way to get to this problem. You used to be able to, there must be better ways to authenticate. Microsoft have much better ways to do it.
Strange that. I mean, how would you know?
Well, that's it. I mean, it doesn't even tell you, it just tells you your password is wrong as you're trying to sign in to set up an account. So it suggests you've done something wrong, which, okay, arguably you have, but you don't know what you've done wrong. You just know you've done something wrong, but what is it? And that's the issue. So I was quite annoyed by that. But actually to do that with a screen reader was infuriating to the point where I gave up and I had to use the eyes. But thankfully I'm in a position I can do that, you know?
Exactly.
If someone was completely blind and couldn't do it, and Tim, I'm looking at you here. I know you don't know that, but I am. You know, I might be looking at you and saying, well, what would you do in that situation? Well, you'd have to call someone else in, or you'd have to go on Be My Eyes or use Ira to do it. And that's just ridiculous, you know?
Thankfully, the one time I had to get one of those app-specific passwords, I was able to do the whole process on my phone. I think it's a fail when it comes to Outlook when that happened, because I had to do it with the Amazon, well, say the Amazon Lady A app, and I was adding my iCloud account to access calendar and reminder features through my Echo that I was doing on my phone. So with the Reminders app and calendar app on my iPhone, you can connect that to your Amazon Echo. And so you have to create an app-specific password to do that. Thankfully, I was able to do it. It was just accessible enough to do it from the Lady A app to Safari, back again, get the password and all that. But it was clunky. Was it accessible? Barely. But it was a clunky process. There's got to be a much more streamlined or better way for them to do this. I get why they do it, like you were talking about, for security purposes, and it is a third-party app that we're talking about. But there's just got to be a better way. Like I said, I didn't do it on my PC, so I don't know how bad it would be there. But on my phone, it was...
Well, there's the answer.
It was okay.
That's the better way, isn't it? Apple want to tie you into the Apple ecosystem so much.
Yeah.
You can only access their websites using an iPhone and Safari. Or a Mac and Safari, I'm guessing. Try and do it from Windows and any other browser, it's inaccessible.
Yeah, use JAWS or NVDA or anything else with any other browser or desktop, right, that's not Apple related. Too bad.
That's not good, though. That is bad
that
for Apple,
good.
I got to say.
I didn't think about that at all. You know, you're absolutely right. That's the problem, isn't it? You've got this... hold, or they have this hold on you, which just drives me insane. It actually annoyed me even more because, as you know, I've been trying out Android for a while and getting on okay with it. I mean, the big problem I've had with Android, thanks for asking, is that
can't get a word in.
I'm just, I've got so much to say. Next week you can take over again. Biggest issue I've had is typing. And I emailed Riz. I've been in touch with some other people. I know some of you have been in touch on Twitter directly to me saying, try this, try the next thing. But I just find typing on the Android really slow. And I just wish there was that setting that you have on the iPhone, which lets you do direct touch typing. So basically, as long as you know roughly where you are and you trust the autocorrect, it doesn't always work in fairness, but you know, it gets you in the direction. If that could just be available on TalkBack, and I haven't found a solution yet, so I'm putting it out there today. If this is a feature that you know of, you can just direct touch type on a specific keyboard, because I know with Android you can download different keyboards, then please tell me, because I've tried all kinds. Voice typing is the only one, but even that is awkward, because what it tells you there is, apparently, maybe it's just not showing up, but I cannot find a little microphone to tap on to be able to dictate. Instead, what I've got to do is change the keyboard. So bottom right of the screen, double tap on change keyboard, and then open up the Google Voice typing app, which is a bit annoying.
It must be very difficult to type on an Android when you have so much blood and tears smothering all over the screen when you're using it.
Yeah.
What? Why? Oh, did I say that out loud? I'm sorry. I was just thinking to like myself.
Tim's come out of his shell.
Oh, wow.
See what you guys have done.
I know what's happening.
No, but I mean, as Apple fanboys, though, back on this accessibility thing, even as a fanboy, I'm like, you know what? No, come on, Apple. You guys led the way in accessibility. They were one of the first, or really the first, to bring accessibility mainstream in a phone like this, to not have the entirety of their website available, no matter what you're using. I mean, heck, look at how bad iTunes is. And that's just sighted people that hate iTunes on a PC. You know, iTunes on a Mac is better, if that's anything at all. But, you know, with accessibility with iTunes, with JAWS or NVDA, it's awful. So they have a history of that with the iTunes being so bad. And if their website's not fully there, then that's very disappointing for a company that has prided themselves on having accessibility for, what, going on 10 years now.
Should we talk about Facebook and Twitter?
If we must.
Sure.
I know you guys touched on the whole Alec Jones story while I was away, and, you know, this is interesting because I was really torn on this one. I was reading all the tweets, you know, the hate-filled tweets saying good riddance to him, and then other people saying, well, it's a disgrace because what about free speech and all that. I tend to come down on the free speech side, you know, partly because my job and what I do, and, you know, I call it a job. I don't think anyone would call this a job. But, you know, what I do for my sanity is come in here and just vent about things. Now, we are governed by rules on what we can say on this show because we broadcast on a radio station. And yes, we are a podcast, but we're also a radio show. And we are governed by the rules set by Ofcom, the government regulator in this country. Boo! But yeah,
you didn't mean that. Sorry.
But we can say so much. We have obviously commercial considerations. We can't say too much about certain companies because we don't want to praise too much because we're not selling for them. And I make that clear all the time. You want to sell stuff, that's your job. We'll tell you what we think about that. But I just think there is a point where how much can you curb back? I get it with broadcast. It's important that there are rules, and those rules apply to all broadcasters. But if we were starting to be silenced on Twitter, say, or on Facebook, or on any other channel that we chose to, even just on if we said, look, we'll just make a podcast so there's no regulations, we can say what we like, and then we were being silenced for that speech because someone out there in blind world hated what we said about Android, for example, then what would we think about that? I would be disgusted. I'd be annoyed. I'd be frustrated. Why should my point of view be silenced just because someone else doesn't like it?
I can't disagree with that. I think there is a very thin line to be had here. However, as you said at the top of the show, you didn't necessarily hear all of last week's episode. So
any of it?
Sean and I
burn.
But as Sean and I talked about, it's kind of the old, you know, you can't scream fire in a public theater kind of thing. There are rules. There are acceptable things you should or should
not say.
Unless
it's a fire, surely.
Unless there really is a fire, right, yeah. Obviously. But
I didn't think that was a thing. If I see a fire somewhere, I can't talk about it? I didn't know that was a rule. Right.
But if you're just there just screaming it just because you want to, you really shouldn't do that because you're inciting something.
Hang on. Stephen, I got to say, that analogy actually works really well because from Alex Jones's point of view, he would be saying, well, I am saying there's a problem here and I'm making people aware of it. Now, to the majority of people, what he says is disgusting and absolutely paranoid rubbish.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
But from his point of view, I am letting people know the truth.
Well, the problem is, though, is that the point of view that he has, if he feels that's the truth, that's fine. But the line is he's saying it on Facebook, saying it on Twitter. And like you said, Stephen, there are rules there. And these are public forums and they have their own rules and their own guidelines that you have to follow. And I get that we should still maintain our free speech at the same time as we follow the rules. Well, where is that line? And I think that line maybe for him came when, you know, you're inciting hateful things and hate speech and maybe even bordering on things that are not true in order to incite hatred and bad things in society. And so you have to be careful there, you know, with what you're saying and take responsibility for what you're saying.
Well, what's interesting is from your vantage point, Tim, because you're in the States, you have free speech in your constitution. That's the thing, the First Amendment, as everyone always says. You know, this is the big deal that you hold on to that, and you're right to. But we don't really have such a thing in this country, which is interesting. And I think people forget.
We are terrible.
Yeah, we don't really have free speech, I don't think, as much, to the same degree. And I refer back again to being on broadcast, watching what we say. I can imagine my boss sitting here thinking, sweating, what is he going to say? But you know, the fact is that we are governed. There are things we cannot say on this show. And trust me, that's why we record this show. So we can deal with that later. But no, I mean, it is so important to me to be able to say what I need to say. And I feel to some respect I can. But I do think that I wouldn't want to be silenced. I think that's my point. And even if, I suppose, from the States and from that point of view, if you want free speech, then you have to be prepared to take the hate speech. Now, on your point about Facebook and Twitter, and the reason I brought this up, because it's in the news this week, they've banned over 900 accounts to tackle fake news. So that's accounts, pages, groups, and all of that, and what they consider to be misleading political behaviour. That's one way of putting it. I just think, okay, these are companies, right? We have to remember that. They are companies, and you're right. They have terms and conditions of service, which, you know, I think it's fair to say, and I can say this publicly at the moment at least, they kind of forgot that they had terms of service as well, I think, for a while.
Yes.
You know, they were shouting about it now.
That's why they're in the place that they're in, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of forgot about that. They're kind of like, oh, is that 18-page thing you get that you just click agree to at the bottom? Oh, yeah, we're okay with that, whatever it says. And I think they've forgotten that. Now they're taking action. Is that a good thing? Yes, I suppose it is. But what we don't want is access to free speech stopped. And I fear the problem is that people have now, and just because of society, Facebook isn't seen as a company. It's seen as a channel. It's seen as a way of communicating, like the phone. And, you know, nobody thinks, well, I can't speak down the phone and not say certain things. You just talk, don't you? But people, I think, see Facebook and Twitter as that. And I think it's this intermingling. This whole thing now has become one. And, you know, you're right, Tim. It is about Facebook and Twitter enacting their policies and all that stuff. But for the user, it's seen as a slap in the face for free speech.
That being said, though, here in the States, even though we have that First Amendment right to free speech, it's still debated, you know, so much over here, because you still have to be responsible for what you say. You still have to be careful what you say. We may have free speech. We can run down the street screaming all the things we want to say. However, there's still regulations, there's still rules. You know, especially if you're on the air and broadcasting, we have FCC rules that protect what broadcasters can say, what people on radio can say. That's why we have a 7-second delay over here for a lot of our radio programs, because just in case someone, the broadcaster or the guest on a show perhaps, says something, they have 7 seconds to bleep it out. So
yeah, we've got 24 hours delay on ours.
Exactly. But there are still those things in place to protect the speech. I mean, hate speech is illegal. We have free speech, but certain types of hate speech and hateful things are still against the law because they can incite certain opinions or certain things. I mean, even, I don't want to really go there, but even our own president a year ago when he, you know, was talking nice about Nazis and those kind of things, you know, a year, I think it was it North Carolina or one of those areas?
Where they're Charlottesville, having, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in Charlottesville, yeah. Correct. And he himself was saying things. And it's like, you know what? Just because you have free speech, just because you're the president, doesn't mean that you should say something like that. That's awful. So you get judged on what you say. And I think with Facebook and Twitter, the public, yes, has free speech and can say what they want to say. And the public in the end could be the final, you know, judge and jury for that. But you're still talking their platform. And Twitter and Facebook have the right to say, no, what you're saying is borderline illegal, borderline, you know, all these other things. We don't want it on our platform. You know, it's kind of like the bullying that went on several years ago with women in technology on Twitter. There's that big, I forget what that movement was called or what that whole
Gamergate.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly. Yeah, Gamergate. Thank you. And that whole thing, and Twitter had to finally realize, yes, we have terms of service here, like you were talking about, Stephen, and we need to do something about this because the women that were attacked, that was awful. And I don't care what kind of free speech we have, that was inappropriate. That crossed the line. So you have to still, even in a country with free speech, you still have to be responsible with it.
it's far too complicated for me to even start on. It's a really delicate and complicated discussion to have. What's offensive? What's hate speech? For me, I think it is as simple as if you say something that incites violence, and again, people will debate what inciting violence means, but for me, if it's a direct threat of violence, which you saw a lot of on Twitter during Gamergate, that's an obvious black and white case of hate speech, and that should be stamped out. When it comes to something like Alex Jones and conspiracy theories, fake news, it's a very fine line. But then again, look, these are private companies. It's up to them, entirely up to them, what content they allow on their platform.
I'll finish this up with a tweet from Donald Trump, shall we?
And please don't. Oh, God.
The tweet is, and I think this is one we can debate all day and night, social media giants are silencing millions of people. Can't do this, even if it means we must continue to hear fake news like CNN, whose ratings have suffered gravely. People have to figure out what is real and what is not without censorship. I think I actually agree with him. Maybe not all of it.
Oh,
but I agree. Because what he's saying is, well, we don't want censorship. We want people to hear what they've got to say. But what he's also saying is that CNN are fake news, and that's obviously ridiculous.
Yeah, in one hand he's saying we want freedom of speech. In the other hand he's saying, but don't listen to them. Listen to Fox instead, which is as biased on the other way.
But I agree with the sentiment, not the entire message.
And the whole idea to let people figure out what's fake and not on their own, well, that's how he got elected, but that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, I know. Let's not go there. Let's not bring politics into this show, because we will, honestly, I know, it's too late. Right, just a quick one on Ocutech. This is an interesting one for me, because I tried these glasses out just last year. There's a pair of glasses that you get. I say glasses. Well, they are actually, yes. They're glasses with a... I said it had a harmonica attached to them, which I don't think they liked, but it, free speech. But, you know, it felt to me like it was a harmonica attached to a pair of glasses. I don't think it is, but that's how fake it felt news. To me. Fake news. And I thought these were brilliant, because for someone like myself, they who have got a bit of vision, and probably for you as well, Sean, I think for you, because I know you've got RP, but I don't know, I think these might even work for you. They basically pinpoint into your pupil. That's how they when they get these glasses to you, they kind of make the lens pinpoint directly, so that when your pupil hits them, you get a very clear image of what's away in the distance. And I was able to read like bus numbers from five streets away, registration numbers. You know, I'm thinking I could drive a car with these on.
Stephen may be exaggerating a little bit.
Well, I don't know. I was standing about two floors up, and we're looking out the window, and there was about three streets away, there was a bus sitting, and I was able to read the number of the bus on it.
That's pretty impressive, I can't say.
That was good. Now, those were manual focus lenses, and I've had Ocutech products for a long time, little magnifiers and little monoculars and all of that. I've had those for a long time, but these ones that they're bringing out, apparently it's limited edition, which annoys me a bit, that they are auto-focusing. And I think that's brilliant, because that's something that it really needed as a feature. General price, I'm not going to say what the price will be of these, because I don't know, but when I was looking at them, we were looking at about £1,600. They're not cheap by any stretch, but the amount of vision that they can give you back is incredible. So depends on you whether or not it's worth the money. But you know, there are lots of companies, and we've got an interview with the guy, the company's name escapes me, but we'll get that for you for next week. But just search for it on the Tech Talk feed. You know, search for Bioptics, because that was what we looked at, and we had Ian on from the company, and the company's name escapes me at the moment, but we will get that for you. But just search for Bioptics on the feed and check it out. It's very, very interesting. You can get these products now. Search for it online. It's called Ocutech, O-C-U-T-E-C-H, Bioptics. Bioptics. Right, okay, moving on. Shall we do some emails before we go?
Why not?
Email, we get email, we get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Okay, well, no Chris this week on the emails, I'm afraid, guys, because, you know, he's got other things to do. He's a very busy guy.
He shouldn't have other things to do.
How dare he?
I know, shocking. Well, I have instead enlisted the services, because these emails this week have been incredibly long, and I thought, I'm going to take a run at them, but I thought, no chance. So I've brought in the services of the Cited Synth. Try saying that after a few. So Cited Synth lady is here, and she's going to read out the emails. Here's one from Brian.
Hi, a couple of things. Although I tend to think of more as we go along, social media is not needed. We could very easily promote mail list groups. Indeed, all groups have mailing lists with them and hence can be used via your favorite email client. I am still, shock horror, using Outlook Express here. Yes, on Windows 7, but shh, don't tell Microsoft. Now, in the old days, we used to use Usenet news groups. These still work, and although many ISPs closed their servers, there are plenty still out there and some paid ones too. They are named groups, and although some have been taken over by spam, many have not, and in any case it's easy to block the idiots with local rules on your client, Thunderbird or whatever. The beauty of both of the above is a single interface for all, no different shortcuts for different social media sites and different forums. It's all done via a client, or Google if you really insist. I use Gmail but on the client, so this last week's mess of a new experience has meant nothing to me. My second topic, self-voicing apps. Surely this is an outdated approach unless you are setting up a PC as just an audio media player, with NVDA. If SpeakOn's author merely made the program accessible, then you would not have to worry about silencing your screen reader to use it, and the conventions of the screen reader would help you outside of the application as well. This is also why I'm critical of solutions like Guide, which is very good, until you outgrow what it can do and want to use Windows more, then you have a major learning curve. Lastly, I agree about terrorist posts, but the problem is one of the needle in the haystack. I'd not really believe any company could jump on these things in an hour of being alerted. For one thing, there are normally multiple posts and people only report one. Most people do not report, they just hit next. I would say give them 6 hours to be realistic here. I too am worried about all of these restrictions affecting our freedom. If I want to say what I think, would one misguided word label me forever as a second-class citizen of the net? Ending on a serious note, warn people not to download the free version of Install CCleaner, as it's employing underhand techniques to get you to try Avast. In the old days there was a checkbox to not download it. It has gone. Instead it is downloaded over a period, then run at some apparently quiet time from a task installed by CCleaner. Ordinarily, this would be just annoying, but since we are talking about Avast here, it is totally inaccessible out of the box, and even the uninstaller leaves a running process that keeps on bothering you, and you can only get shot of it with a program you run in safe mode called Avast Clear. Even then you need to remove the task manager task and delete many of the files manually after the task has been stopped and the machine restarted. I would say that Avast is in fact itself a virus for blind users. If you want to use CCleaner, download the portable version and uncheck all the snooping on data stuff in the preferences. Shame they hassle you, as a bit like stores where salespersons keep pestering you, when I just leave and go elsewhere. Software like this makes me not want to pay for a registered copy. End of rant. Have a nice day, as they say, Brian.
Wow, I mean, that's a long email. I don't even know, I'm going to forget most of it. I do want to hit on one point, though, because mailing lists, I think, are a very good point, and I don't think we touched on it, did we, Tim, last week?
I don't think we really talked about mailing lists, no. We did talk a lot about social media and accessing communities and different things that way, but I don't know about mailing lists. I mean, I like them to a certain extent, but how far back do we go? I mean, you and I have talked about BBSs and ICQ. I mean, really, how far back do we want to go with getting our information?
But mailing lists work. They work, they're good. Still, lots of people use them, so it is a good point.
It is a good point.
And as for self-voicing apps, I agree with you there as well. I find it slightly, jarring, I suppose, to turn off the system screen reader, be that on Windows or my smart device, and then having to turn it on again after I've used a specific app. I don't like that. That annoys me. And CCleaner, for anyone that doesn't know, that's a app that cleans up all the junk files or temporary files on your Windows system. I've used it in the past. It was a very good app. But any app or any developer that starts installing software in that manner, as stealthily, almost sneakily, trying to get it past you without your okay, I don't like that. I don't think that's a good idea. And I wouldn't recommend it. I would argue you don't actually need something like CCleaner anymore. Avast itself is an antivirus program. It's okay. I've used that again in the past. But as Brian said, totally inaccessible. So thanks for the information, Brian.
Okay, let's get another email in from Julian.
Hello, I have been emailing rather a lot lately, but can I say how depressed I was by your brief discussion of the automated shop of the future? With a white cane I can find my way to the local shops, but once I am inside, finding anything on the shelves defeats me. My remaining eyesight just is not up to it, so I have to go to shops where I can reach the tills and ask for help. Even shops where the cash desks are located near an exit physically separated from the shop entrance are a major challenge, requiring me to wind my way through a maze of aisles, invariably littered with every collision hazard known to man.
The idea of a shop where there are literally no staff at all fills me with dread. Even if there was some sort of automated system to guide me to the correct section of shelves, there would still be the hair-graying issue of having to reach out blindly to take hold of the product. How often are things stacked on top of each other or left teetering on the very edge of a shelf? Bad enough with boxes and cans, but consider the ultimate horror, glass bottles, and the utter humiliation when they come crashing to the ground. That is a shop I can well do without, and it would probably be a no-go zone for me. Back to the internet and another nail in the coffin of high street shops. By the way, in a shop with no staff, who cleans up breakages? A health and safety hazard with many items. Regards, Julian.
Yeah, and by the way, I couldn't get that donk out of there, so I apologise about the donk.
I couldn't agree more. I think he's absolutely spot on. I don't think this is the answer to the problem of online shopping, decimating the high street. If anything, I think it should go the other way. More service in these bricks and mortar stores may be the answer to online shopping.
Yeah, good email. And, you know, you obviously talking about that last week. Very interesting. I just want to finish up with one, though, that Dave sent in for all of us.
I think Tim sounds like Yogi Bear, and Sean sounds like Boo Boo. As for Steve, well, the jury is still out. Great show. Keep up the good work, Dave.
What? How dare you, sir?
Hey, Boo Boo.
I have no idea what you said on that show over the past. I mean, obviously I do because I've listened to everything. But, you know, I have no idea what you've kicked
that,
off.
That said, I think you are aware that we have been compared in recent weeks to the old Wacky Races TV show. And so I have a feeling that's where this is coming from.
I can hear Yogi Bear now every time you speak. I can't get that out of my head.
I know. That's it now. Yogi Bear. Well,
I already was thinking you so much of Muttley, but Boo Boo? Yeah, maybe. Hey, Boo Boo.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that I don't have a name yet.
It'll come.
I'm sure it will come in time. Yes, it'll come in time, probably in the next week. listen, guys, it's been great being by with you again, and thanks so much for doing this. We are back again next week at the same time. Don't forget the podcast, which is always available at 1 o'clock, roughly on a Tuesday. I say roughly because I do it, and you know, it sometimes gets at 1:30, but you know, I aim to get it there for 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. So do check out the podcast for that. If you want to email in, feel free, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. On Twitter, I'm at TechTalkerSteve, if you want to say hello. Sean?
At The Blurred Nerd.
And Tim?
I am at TimSchwartz5.
And that's it for the show this week. Thank you so much. We will be back again next week with lots more discussion. Tell us your thoughts on the smart TVs. I'm going to review mine when it arrives, so I can't wait to tell you about that next week. And lots more. And maybe more in my world of pain with Android. I'm only kidding. Catch you next week.